Here's Andy Udman.
Driven to desperation.
It was an absolutely brutal decision.
One family's plight is all too common.
You know, we love you.
It's an unprecedented look at health care in this country, an insider's view of Canadian hospitals and what they don't want you to know. It's called Rate My Hospital, a week-long expose from our colleagues at the Fifth Estate.
One notable headline, nearly a quarter of nurses would not recommend their hospital to a friend or a family member. They cited worrying staffing levels, and almost 40% of nurses nationally said they felt burnt out.
I bumped into one of my Harvard professors at a conference. He looked out at this conference room of 2,000 people, and he said, "How many of you know of another doctor who should not be practicing because he's too dangerous?" Every single hand went up.
Yowza. Yowza. Dangerous doctors. This is scary stuff. Remember the movie Catch Me If You Can, and how Leonardo DiCaprio was able to impersonate a doctor? Ever since that movie, when I go to see my doctor, I always take a sneak peek at those diplomas hanging on the wall just to make sure the doctor didn't get them online. Folks, we have great news this morning for our health minister, Deb Matthews. With all the disasters that we've had in the Ontario health system, the latest one making the front page of the Toronto Star just yesterday, with the diluted chemotherapy drugs that we've been serving up at our hospital here in London for the last year, a mistake which they caught in 2 hours in Peterborough. There are systems that may be worse. Believe it or don't, if you can believe it, how bad it is south of the border. Pam Killeen joins me this morning for our weekly visit. Good morning, Pam. Boy, we are going to rock the boat on this one.
That's right. I'm thrilled to say we have Dr. Marty Makary on the phone this morning, and he's the author of the book Unaccountable, What Hospitals Won't Tell You and How Transparency Can Revolutionize Healthcare. And I understand, Dr. Makary, that you're out in California this morning.
Yeah, I'm out in California, and it's good to be with you.
Well, we very much appreciate you joining us because it's earlier in the morning there in California, and we know how much you would have loved to have sleep in. I can't wait to ask you a million questions. I'm looking at the back of your book, Unaccountable. Medical mistakes are the fifth leading cause of death in the United States, doctor?
You know, we tend not to think of medical mistakes and preventable infections as a disease, but if it were, it would rank as one of the top killers out there. And I think that speaks to the problem. It's been a silent problem for a long time, and now we've got doctors and nurses speaking up about the issue. And of course, a lot of patients have been saying, this is something that we've experienced already. It seems like almost everybody has a story of a family member or friend that has had some bad encounter with the health system.
Okay, let me go to bullet point number two on the cover of your book. I mean, this one just is jaw-dropping. The number of patients killed by preventable medical errors every year is equivalent to 4 jumbo jets crashing every week.
And some say that may be the low end of the range of the estimate. You know, we haven't had good numbers in science to study this problem in the past, but now we have the leading bodies of research in medicine speaking up about this problem and saying it's an endemic and it's everywhere, and it's not just the United States, North America. It's, you know, sometimes the poorer countries in the world, it's even worse. Doctors are good people, and we've got good people working in a bad system all over the world. And the doctors and nurses are frustrated about this problem, just as patients are frustrated, and they are speaking up.
Now, Dr. Makary, you say in your book that essentially the healthcare system is unsustainable because of lack of accountability. This is a big theme in your book.
Well, you know, what we see all over the world is that somebody goes to two doctors and they get two completely different opinions. Now, sometimes there is two different ways of doing things, and look, I'm a busy surgeon, and I know you've got to customize care to the individual and what their goals and needs are and what their background is. But best practices really are poorly adhered to in any area. So you look at laparoscopic versus open surgery. It's the Wild West out there.
Dr. Macri, I'm just going to jump in. We're just going to try to get a better phone line. We're going to just have you hang up, if you don't mind, and we'll phone you right back, and hopefully we'll get a better phone line. John has a comment on the little bit he's heard so far. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you today?
We're good.
Listen, I've got a bit of a story here. Two years ago, this past February 28th, slipped and fell on ice at Sherwood Forest Mall. Couldn't get back up. Some great people in the parking lot saw it happen, phoned an ambulance. Ambulance got there. I was at University Hospital in the parking lot in the ambulance by 9 o'clock in the evening, waited an hour and a half in the ambulance before they could get me out into the hospital. The two ambulance drivers were great. They were getting upset that they couldn't get me in. They got me in, waited for 3 hours in a hallway with the ambulance drivers really getting upset now, thinking that someone should see me. A nurse kept coming saying, yeah, we'll get there in a minute. By 12 o'clock, they got me into a wheelchair, put me into the emerge department out in the waiting room. The doctor or the nurse, it was a male nurse, at admitting, I started asking him, can I get some aspirin? Like, the pain is starting to really get to me. And it turned out it was a compound fracture. My leg was, my ankle was bleeding. He said he couldn't do anything until a doctor saw me. I couldn't even get aspirin. By 1 o'clock, they put a sign out there that said for non-emergency people, it could be up till 12 noon the next day. I said, you got to be kidding me. Give me some aspirin. I need something for the pain. I can't do that. I said, give me the phone then. I'm signing myself out. I'll phone my brother to come and get me. He told me he didn't suggest I do that. I did that. Some other people in the waiting room, an emergency, that were waiting for to see a doctor, helped me get into my brother's car. He took me back to Sherwood Forest Mall, helped me get into my car. I was going to go home, and I thought, no, hold on a second here. St. Thomas has a hospital. So with that broken ankle, I drove to St. Thomas. I got up to the door there. An ambulance attendant came out and said I couldn't park there. I told her what had happened. She says, just hold on, stay right here. Ran in, got her partner. They lifted me out of the car, got me into St. Thomas Emerge. Within 20 minutes, I was on a morphine IV drip. They were freaking out. They started doing ultrasound on my leg, and I asked them what this was all about. They said, having a broken ankle this bad, one of the things that can happen is a blood clot. They were worried about blood clots. I'll try and shorten the story. Anyways, I had to have surgery on that ankle because it was, like I say, a compound fracture. When I was in for 4 days at St. Thomas Hospital, I tell you what, it was like the Waltons. I thought at night they were going to be, good night, John Boy, good night, Mary Ellen. They couldn't do enough for me. The food was incredible there, Andy. It was incredible. They should open up a restaurant at that hospital to make extra money for the funding of the hospital.
Are you surprised, then, that in the recent survey done by the CBC's Marketplace, that St. Thomas Hospital scored high marks?
Doesn't surprise me at all. I've been through it. It was great. And you know the ironic thing is? I never even got a call back from University Hospital to find out what had happened to me.
Oh, my gosh.
What an absolute amazing.
But this was in the last 2 years. And then I'll tell you, within 3 months, not even 3 months, a month after that, my son had a spill snowboarding at Bowler Mountain. The ski patrollers there phoned me, said they think he may have a concussion. They're not sure. It could be a mild one, but they wanted me to come and get him and take him to hospital. So I went and got him. I thought, there's no way. This was a Sunday afternoon. There's no way I'm going to University Hospital. Took him over to St. Thomas. Within minutes, they had a great doctor look at him. Yep, he says, in my opinion, he's got a mild concussion. When I told them why we were here, they got him in right away. Anyways, that doctor said to my son and to me, he said, if in the next 24 hours it gets any worse, your headache, if it doesn't start to subside, then get in here right away. Don't phone your doctor. Just get in and see us right away.
Well, anyway. John, we have to leave it there. We're going to go back to Dr. Macri, who we lost for just a moment there, but hopefully we've got a line. Hi, doctor.
Good to be with you again.
Let me just read a portion of your book and then ask you to comment. As a surgeon who has worked in some of the best medical centers in the nation, I can testify the American medicine is spectacular in many ways. Patients travel from all over the world to receive our state-of-the-art care. American research is the envy of the world. Yet, the same medical system routinely leaves surgical sponges inside patients, amputates the wrong limbs, and tolerates the overdosing of children because of sloppy handwriting. In 2010, Harvard study out of the New England Journal of Medicine, as many as 25% of all patients are harmed by medical mistakes. Doctor, that's a staggering figure.
It's usually a minor harm, but one in every four patients in a hospital experiences some harm from a medical mistake. So we've really got an endemic, and it's something now that we've got numbers behind. Doctors are good people working in a bad system. And, you know, if you look at the burnout rate in medicine, it's high. Doctors are getting crushed right now, declining payments, more pressure to see more patients, an increasingly bureaucratic system with paperwork and needless tasks. You know, a lot of times the answer to the healthcare system is already there with the frontline people in the industry. If you talk to the doctors and nurses on the front lines of medicine, they will tell you how to make healthcare better. They just feel that their voice is not being heard.
Now, when you wrote your book, you were afraid of some kickback, you know, people not being very favorable of what you were writing. However, you did find that you had a lot of supporters.
Yeah, I think docs are frustrated with this problem, and nurses in particular have been watching variations in quality and really been struggling with the issue of being able to do something about it. You know how hard it is to watch something going on in front of you that is not right, it's unethical, but you have no power or control over it. And I think doctors groups are banding together, nurses groups are speaking up on the issue of patient safety, and it's now their number one issue. We've got doctors associations identifying areas of over-treatment in their own specialty and broadcasting that to the world. That's the Choosing Wisely campaign. So this is really a doctor and nurse-led movement.
Doctor, we were just shocked by that clip we played of you off the top at this conference where the speaker asked, how many here know of a dangerous doctor, and every hand went up?
It's hard. It's really hard to make a difference on this subject, because it's such a complicated program. But I'm convinced from everything I've seen in my career that the answer is in empowering patients with good information and also adding some transparency to the system that I work in.
Now, how are we going to do this, though? How are we going to make the system more transparent? I mean, it's been cloaked in secrecy for so long.
Well, there is an exciting project right now that we're doing, and it's called the Transparency Project. And we're seeing hospitals all over step up and saying, we want to be more honest with our patients, and we are going to do the following. We're going to disclose errors as soon as we find out about them. We're going to participate in registries and disclose our performance to the public. We're going to have external peer review. We're going to have some of our cases individually selected and reviewed by other doctors that are independent, and they can comment divorced of the issues of the local politics. Because, you know, it's very hard to have good peer review in medicine when the people doing your review are part of the local politics of the referral practices. And finally, we've seen this program called Executive Rounds be incredibly liked by the doctors and nurses, where the administrators come and round on patients once a week or once a month, and they listen to the docs and nurses on the front lines of hospitals and ask them, what do you need to do your job better? And when people listen, things happen, and it's exciting. There are great models of success where hospitals have all of their employees saying, this is a great place to work, and I would go here for my own care. That's what we need at every hospital.
Doctor, we're still in shock here in London, Ontario, over the fact that it's just been revealed and was confirmed again this week that a chemotherapy drug, which has been shipped to our local hospital and administered to hundreds of patients, turns out to be diluted up to about 20%, and the hospital simply didn't notice, and there was no overriding body or any checks and balances to prevent that from happening. When this drug arrived at a clinic in Peterborough, it was discovered within 2 hours, and we've had horrible reaction from cancer patients. This has just rocked their world. And let me cite one other story we've been working on recently. Was a man who choked to death his own son in a hotel in South London. It turns out later that David Carmichael was under the influence of what specific?
That was Paxil. Yeah.
That was Paxil, and had not been warned of the possible side effects. You know, there are a lot of people who, if they listen to this series on a regular basis, they may think that Pam and I have it in for the medical system. The fact is, four of my five sisters are nurses, and I want nothing more than to have a very safe and reliable, trustworthy medical system. You're saying in the United States of America, as sophisticated as the system is, it makes a lot of mistakes.
You know, we have a tremendous amount of technology in medicine. It is really remarkable. And our research, even at Johns Hopkins, is the envy of the world. It is amazing what we can do surgically. And some people absolutely need surgery. But if you look at the whole system, we have an endemic of overtreatment, we have wide variations in quality, and we have a problem of medical mistakes.
You're even a critic of the fundraising efforts that go on in and around hospitals as well.
Well, when a hospital CEO is making $5 million, and that's not really out there in the public information, and yet they're asking children to collect pennies from other children or money in their schools for the hospital, I think people should know that money is really not going to fight cancer, and there are better charities out there that are directly helping kids.
Dr. Macri, you're talking to someone who's been part of a children's radiothon raising funds at our local hospital for probably a dozen a year, so that point in particular really resonates. Because we're running short of time, I want to do something here. 1 minute, if I could, on what the problem is, bullet point form, if you would, and then we'll look at 1 minute of solutions. What are, and we cited some of them off the top, what are the major and shocking problems in the American hospital system?
Well, people that pay taxes or their businesses have to contribute to health costs say, you know, health care is the only thing that doesn't have any metric of performance. A business CEO say, you know, every other contractor I have, we give them money, or any other thing we spend money on in terms of tax dollars, they receive money and there's some output of how well they're doing, except in healthcare. It's so the money just gets thrown at it and there's no real measure of performance. Now that we have good ways to measure quality, the question as a society is, do we believe that the patients and public have a right to know about the quality of their hospital? And I believe they do. And we're seeing a movement right now sweep across medicine to talk about medical errors, talk about overtreatment, and to cut the waste in healthcare. And I think it's making medicine more honest to people.
And one little favor, if I could, Dr. Macri, before you leave us, tell us that this is strictly an American problem, and up there in Canada, they're doing everything right.
I'd love to say that. But unfortunately, people tell me sometimes that when you go outside the United States, there's some systems where it's a little bit better, but for the most part, systems out there have even less accountability.
Specifically, give us your snapshot of what you know about the Canadian medical care system, and specifically here in Ontario, what you've heard and what your views are.
Well, I've heard actually that the hospital systems in Ontario are as spectacular as some of the hospitals in the United States, but the variations in quality are there, just as they are in the United States, and you have to walk in blind many times. You don't know what you're walking into.
And we haven't even gotten to so many of those issues, like an anesthesiologist here at University Hospital charged with sex crimes right in the operating room. I'm sure you don't have any of those horror stories south of the border.
Well, you know, that was really the basis of writing the book Unaccountable. I wanted to give patients a checklist of things they should ask when they're seeking medical care. And unfortunately, those problems exist everywhere.
And what are a few items on your checklist?
Well, what if I don't have this procedure or treatment done? Then what? What are the health consequences? What if we postpone the treatment and see how I do over time? What is the C-section rate here? What's the readmission rate? What are the minimally invasive options? So there are a lot of important questions out there that people just need to know about.
And Dr. Macri, have you got any plans for the future, any other projects in the works?
Right now we're working on this international transparency project. Hospitals are signing on to say we're on board with this message. It's going very well. And I am looking at doing more speaking because people love this message and we're trying to connect with folks.
And you have a website, transparenthealthcare.org?
And unaccountablebook.com.
Okay.
Terrific. Doctor, a real pleasure talking to you, and bravo to you for cleaning up what is a real mess.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Okay. Thank you,
Doctor.
All the way from California. The book is called Unaccountable, Dr. Marty Macri. He's a brave man.
Very brave man. Yeah. I mean, he must have been pretty nervous before writing this book, but honestly, in his book, he even says that it was widely accepted that people working within the profession are fed up and they want to see a change.
CBC, just before we go to the break here, the CBC did a recent survey, and bravo to them, and offered the opportunity for Canadians to rate your hospital here in London. We had some interesting results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 25% of the nurses said they wouldn't recommend their own hospital. I was in a hospital recently to visit a friend, and the nurse told me, don't put your purse on the floor. It's too filthy.
In fact, there are even stories of visitors to the hospital starting to mop the floor in some
mm-hmm.
cases.
Mm-hmm. And a nurse just told me recently that they're using those handy wipes instead of bathing the patients, that they're using these handy wipes to bathe them instead.
Hospital horror stories, we want to hear them coming up right after the news break right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
One notable headline, nearly a quarter of nurses would not recommend their hospital to a friend or a family member. They cited worrying staffing levels, and almost 40% of nurses nationally said they felt burnt out.
I bumped into one of my Harvard professors at a conference. He looked out at this conference room of 2,000 people, and he said, how many of you know of another doctor who should not be practicing because he's too dangerous? Every single hand went up.
Horrors from our medical care system. Well, thanks a lot, Andy, for sharing all these horror stories after we just, over the last several weeks, have been living one, namely the dilution of chemotherapy drugs coming to London Health Sciences Center with hundreds of cancer patients thinking that they were getting the real goods, the chemotherapy their doctor had told them about, only to find out there was a screw-up and nobody noticed for an entire year. We are joined this morning, as we are every Thursday morning, by Pam Colleen, who is... Now, what do you call yourself? And people say, well, what are you? A nutritional consultant? Andy doesn't spell it out on every show.
Nutritional consultant, yeah.
Who knows a heck of a lot more about medicine than many doctors I've met, and we'll talk more with Pam in just a moment. Roger wants to jump in. Roger, we're inviting praise or horror stories about your local hospital in the context of the CBC survey recently and the conversation we just had. What's your story?
My story is praise in the extreme. It was last summer that I had a weakness. I was could not get up from a sitting position and stand on my feet. I called the 911. They took me to the hospital, and it was on a Saturday. And by Saturday night, they gave me an angiogram and saw that things were really bad in there. And so they said, I heard them say, "When's the next OR opening?" And he said Monday morning, and I was on the table at 8 o'clock on Monday morning, and done by with a bypass surgery. Mm-hmm. And I can't say enough. And Dr. Quantz, who was the surgeon of record there, was just marvelous.
Heart patients get to go
in the world here. To me, yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah, heart patients get to go to the front of the line in emergency settings. So they get preferential treatment, absolutely.
And Roger,
and my 4 weeks of care at Parkwood was just, I can't say enough, and the rehabilitation on the fifth floor there for geriatrics.
Yeah.
And tell me how good the nurses were.
They couldn't do enough.
That's what I've heard about the Parkwood, their nurses there. They're fabulous,
and,
I hear.
I just was so impressed. I couldn't let this program go without putting something in for them. They were at Parkwood. There's a on the fifth floor, I think it is. It's a geriatric recovery, and they were just marvelous.
Roger, if you heard our last half hour, did you hear our last half hour?
I heard some of it.
Well, yes, and you notice the doctor is doing exactly what we're doing. He is talking about the horror stories with great pain, because he's saying there is so much that's fantastic about our medical care system, but there's so much that's horrible. And I'm sure, Roger, you've heard the horror stories as well, and we're inviting people. Roger, thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Ken. Ken, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm turning around right now.
Yeah.
I called you a while ago. My wife died of brain cancer, but I wanted to, at the time, I didn't mention a couple doctors that were amazing. And I won't bother the ones that couldn't be bothered, but there's a Dr. Fryer that works out of the Woodstock Hospital in the, I think it's called Shakura House by Toyota. And she was an amazing doctor. She was amazing to taking care of my wife. And I just thought I'd mention that. And
just so you're clear, this is not a case of saying, is our medical system good or bad?
No.
You know, pick your side. Who thinks it's good and who thinks it's bad? We know there are wonderful people in the profession. There are wonderful doctors and wonderful, wonderful nurses. But the system has some horrible glitches.
Well, you also got some horrible, horrible doctors. When we changed doctors a while ago, we got a doctor out of Tilsonburg, and it's in the Tilsonburg thing. Now, what he started, which apparently some other doctors do, if you want an appointment, you have to do it for that day, and you get a call between 9 and 11. Now, one time my wife was in so much pain, I luckily had the day off, and I had a couple days off. I called. By quarter after 9, it was all booked, and I said, well, can I book for the next day? Oh, no, the doctor doesn't like to do that. I said, my wife is in hordes of pain, so I end up taking my wife to the walk-in clinic. So I'm just heard you guys talking for a minute. I just want to mention Dr. Fry at the cancer clinic in Woodstock Hospital. She works out at the Toyota, where they donated that house. I think it's called Secure House.
Okay, make it brief, Ken. We have to move on. We got so many calls.
No, I'm just saying, they're amazing people.
Okay, absolutely. Appreciate the call. Josie, go ahead.
Hi. I suffer from a condition where my eyes bleed. I've had about 10 operations. Dr. Gonder at the Ivy Clinic is second to God. How can we ever complain about our health system? Go to the States, go to Europe, and then come back and, kiss the ground like the Pope does.
Okay, Josie, you have a good point, and God bless you. Like I say, four of my five sisters are nurses. But, Josie, these are life and death issues, and people are dying. You heard us say that in the States, medical mistakes are the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. You know, Josie, that we pumped chemotherapy drugs out of London Health Sciences Center for a year. The drugs were compromised up to 20%. They were diluted and nobody noticed. Josie, would you agree we have some major flaws in our medical care system?
The major flaws is that they've got so many people employed. There has to be a decision maker. Just like when you go on the air, you may have assistants, but you're the decision maker. The people from the medical center that release those drugs are responsible. Don't blame our hospitals. It was one hospital that actually found the problem. It's overworked, overburdened, and just more just not having leadership. That's where it all comes down.
And that's
to
what Dr. Macri is saying, essentially, is that the system is broken. There are lots and lots of good people who work within the system, but the system won't allow them to shine, essentially.
Josie, great call. I appreciate it. Pam, breaking news. I want to share this with you. And we've had breaking news on each of our stories the last several weeks, and here we go again. Literally, this was on Jill's 10:30 news. Health Canada is warning that the cancer drug, Avastin, has been linked in rare cases to necrotizing fasciitis, the so-called flesh-eating disease. The agency says in Canada, two cases of necrotizing fasciitis have been seen in people using Avastin, and one of those cases was fatal. I don't want to get off track by regurgitating what we keep saying about some of the drugs and their side effects. Folks, we are inviting you to call with your observations about our hospital system. I want to play for you just a short report from CBC as they set up their recent series, Rate Your Hospital, and some of those observations from that report. This report runs about a minute and a half. Were very upsetting. Here we go.
It's an unprecedented look at health care in this country, an insider's view of Canadian hospitals and what they don't want you to know. It's called Rate My Hospital, a week-long expose from our colleagues at the Fifth Estate. This morning, we start on the front lines with our nation's nurses, asking them questions no one else has. Chris Brown now with some of their striking responses from Vancouver.
Well, this project is a Canadian first that's giving people across the country more information than perhaps they've ever had before about their hospital and what those on the inside think about the quality of care that's being provided. Now, as part of this project, CBC News has done a sweeping survey of more than 4,500 registered nurses in more than 250 hospitals about how they perceive the quality of care where they work. And some of the results are striking. One notable headline, nearly a quarter of nurses would not recommend their hospital to a friend or a family member. They cited worrying staffing levels, and almost 40% of nurses nationally said they felt burnt out. So we took these results to nursing professor Patty Rodney, who told us there is a disconnect between those making healthcare decisions and those in the front line who don't feel as though their concerns are seen as legitimate.
There's a level of bureaucratic decision-making where those experts on the ground don't get listened to, and that's at the root of an awful lot of this level of turmoil and angst.
Now, the survey is certainly not all negative. Nurses in every part of Canada overwhelmingly said that patient safety was a high priority, and 55% nationally graded their own unit's work as excellent, and it's even higher in places such as PEI and Nova Scotia. Still, overall, the survey exposes a lot of stress points. Chris Brown, CBC News, Vancouver.
And that was quite a series on the CBC. We're inviting you folks to make your observations about our hospital system. And Pam, you've just been with a friend in a hospital recently and had some very disturbing observations.
Right. One of the nurses told me, don't put my purse on the floor because it's too filthy. Another point, I took into emergency and I saw people in the emergency room lying, writhing in pain on the chairs in the emergency room. It took hours before they were admitted. What are they doing lying on the chairs in the emergency room when they're in that kind of pain?
And you said how many hours this person waited?
I was waiting hours for my friend to come out. So it was several hours while I watched this person writhe in pain on the chairs. Another friend of mine was just in hospital. Her husband was reacting to some medications that he had been wrongly prescribed. And I think it took about 9 hours before he got a painkiller. And she overheard the nurses talking and saying that they had forgotten to give him his drug to get him out of the pain. And then when, of course, he was given the drug, he was basically, he was on an opiate. So he was very weak and he was falling over. And she's this tiny little thing and she had to dress him and nobody would help her in terms of even getting him dressed again.
It's shocking how many hours you have to wait in the emergency wards of our hospitals if you don't have your hand over your heart and saying, I got chest pains, because that's the fastest way to get to the front of the line. Julie, what's your story?
Hi, I was just at the University Hospital last Wednesday with my mother-in-law, and I arrived at 11. She had arrived by ambulance at 8 o'clock in the morning, and she was in the hallway. There was about 8 other people laying on the gurneys, on the ambulance gurneys in the hallway, and it took her 7 hours to get an emergency room and 34 hours to get a room in the hospital. And my mother-in-law is like 80.
Oh, dear.
And it was horrible. We couldn't see a doctor. We never saw an eMERGE doctor until we got into a room. The nurse, there seemed to be a nurse in the hallway, and that was her job, was to look after the people in the hallway. And she was in tears. I don't know why, but she was. Overworked. It was just horrible. And I'm from St. Thomas. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And I would not go to London. Sorry.
The London Health Sciences, I think, got a C grade in that hospital survey.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. St. Joe's got an A grade.
Wow.
Julie, we're not here to bash our hospitals. I'm a huge supporter of our hospitals. I've worked on the Children's Radiothon for 12 years. I know a lot of the staff down there. There's very few people I admire as much as Dr. Tim Fruin, who cared for us when we had a very sick child years ago. But the system has some horrible flaws. Is it the fault of the doctors and the nurses? That's what we're just trying to sort out.
I don't think so. The nurse that was crying, she told me to blame Deb Matthews.
Oh, dear.
So I'm not sure. It just didn't seem like there was enough doctors and nurses or enough space. I don't know what was going on that day, but I remember you had talked about one time about the ambulances, how, you know, they were backed up and they couldn't get out to patients in the community. And that's all it was all the ambulance gurneys were taken in the hallway.
Wow.
So they couldn't move.
Who was it? Was it your mother-in-law who had this experience? How is she?
She's in the hospital still now, yeah.
34 hours from the time.
Emerge room.
From the time she arrived by ambulance before she got a bed.
Yep. 8 in the morning till the next day at 6 or 7 in the afternoon.
When you're in the condition that she is, and especially you said she was what, 80?
Yep. Yeah, she had hernia surgery, and she was, you know, in a hell of a lot of pain. And there was an older lady that was brought in by ambulance who had just broke her hip.
and she was in the hallway crying.
Mm.
You know, it was horrible.
Folks, listen to what these folks are saying. This is not Andy and Pam.
And we live in a first world country, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
We're a wealthy country.
Yeah.
It's so sad, Julie. It's so sad. And getting worse. That's the sad news. Girish, what's your story?
Wealthy country, but very, very stupid. Two things I want to tell you. One is, over a period of time, I have observed that the doctors are so arrogant and do not pay attention to the troops on the ground. They do not listen to the nurses and don't pay them enough respect. Point number two, the doctors have become nothing but glorified salespeople for the drug companies. And that's all they are.
Girish, I appreciate the call. Short break. Back with more of your calls in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. And Julie, what's your story?
Hi, I was just at the University Hospital last Wednesday with my mother-in-law, and I arrived at 11. She had arrived by ambulance at 8 o'clock in the morning, and she was in the hallway. There was about 8 other people laying on the gurneys, on the ambulance gurneys in the hallway, and it took her 7 hours to get an emergency room and 34 hours to get a room in the hospital.
Some very good advice for you, folks. Don't get sick.
That's right.
Pam, I mean, that's what it amounts to. Don't get sick.
And you hear about such variation from one hospital to another as well. I know a gentleman who went to an emergency ward here in London. It took several hours before he got any attention. Went to an emergency ward out in a hospital in British Columbia and for the same issue. And he was in and out of the hospital, treated very, very well. And I think the whole time he was in there was like an hour and a half, something like that.
Wow. We are out of time. Pam, for those who have just joined us, what have we said in this hour? Wrap it up and put a bow on it, if you would.
Oh, I think one of the main messages that we put out on the show is just don't get sick in the first place, if you can avoid it at all costs. And that's why we teach so much on the area of nutrition. But I think that it would be nice if Dr. Marty Makary and other people of like-mindedness would speak out more often on some of the deficiencies that we're seeing in our healthcare system, because it's a system that is indeed broken. We hear about it all the time in the news here, how the healthcare system is bankrupting our province. So much more needs to be done in order to make this system accountable and effective. And unfortunately, we're not seeing a lot of initiatives going on here in Canada to improve the system.
Sometimes you get a phone call like that, last one from Julia, 80-year-old woman, her mother-in-law, 34 hours before she gets a bed at University Hospital. We have some horrible flaws in our system. And here's Deb Matthews and company. Busy.
And the nurse in that story, the nurse said, look to Deb Matthews as being one of the causes of the problem. Why are we seeing so many delays? Why are people lined up in gurneys in emergency room areas?
Pam, thank you so much. We have some breaking news, folks. I was going to break this news tomorrow, but I understand it is breaking even as we speak.